It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And Dave Richfield's here.
Get your shit on.
What?
I have no idea. Let's go.
And here we go, hitting the ground running.
Oh my God, your second coffee's gone.
Guys, I'm here to drink coffee and talk about Cosmos.
We made
coffee. And I'm all out of coffee.
We made coffee like we always do right before the show. And we had iced coffee because it's like 85 degrees. And Dave turned to me and goes, all right, I'll have another one. And his iced coffee wasn't cold yet. Like the hot coffee
warm.
Poured over the ice, the glass is still warm. So I made you another one. And I said, take this slowly. Did you heed my advice?
As you notice, that
we're
cup lasted
14 seconds on the show.
As you notice, that cup of coffee lasted twice as long as the first one. So let's do this. I'm ready. Let's go.
Your head's moving around like Stevie Wonder.
It's all right.
So we have been planning to do this one pretty much for the last 3 months. We said, well, let's do it when it wraps up. But we want to talk about Cosmos, which just wrapped up on Fox and is available already on Blu-ray and DVD.
Yeah, I remember them soliciting it pretty early. I was watching it on Hulu because I don't conform to anyone's schedule but my own.
As one should.
Just you and Hulu's.
As one should. No, Hulu, you just watch it as soon as it's on. You watch it whenever. I was watching it like 2 in the morning all the time. But I was surprised to find out. What's that?
I feel sad about that.
No, that was good. That was great because it was ready as soon as I wanted it. What's weird about Cosmos is it was on Fox, which I only know because like I saw like a YouTuber on Facebook or somebody would be like, Fox is Cosmos. And I'm like, well, that's weird because they're so right wing. Like, and he pretty much like takes a dump on every goofy red wing argument against science.
Well, Fox, that's the interesting thing about Fox. Fox News is really right wing, but Fox has always been the home of King of the Hill and The Simpsons.
Then why is
Fox
News?
It's always been kind of left. You know, like, Simpsons make fun of Fox all the time. I mean, this could easily become a Fox News.
I don't know.
Which would be funny after last week.
But, a topic for another time, perhaps.
But, yeah, I think it's all about the marketplace. I think Fox News found that if they appealed to right wing, they were seen as different than CNN. Whereas if they didn't, they look like another CNN.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if they really have those politics one way or the other. Because The Simpsons is really, really left, a lot of those jokes. It's almost The Daily Show sometimes.
And so you have Family Guy and All-American Dad, The Cleveland Show, all that by Seth
MacFarlane, who produced this.
Cosmos.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Cosmos isn't left or right wing. It's just facts.
The science wing.
Well, that's the interesting thing is I've read a lot of articles that say, oh, it's left wing because we've managed to politicize science now.
Well,
because people are saying,
science,
oh,
bad science.
Yeah, well, because Cosmos has said that global warming is happening, that like right wings are like, oh, it's left leaning.
And it's like, no, that's the science and that's
fact. It's happening.
And you're kind of crazy for not believing it.
Yeah, my dad got really right wing, and he lives in Rockaway, which got hit by Hurricane Sandy. And when the polar ice caps melted last month, there was an interactive map, and I wish I knew the URL. But there's an interactive map where you can look at the globe and move the water level up each foot because the oceans are supposed to rise 10 feet because of this.
Yeah,
and you can put in any zip code you want. And then start raising the water and see what happens to the shoreline.
Right.
And I put in Rockaway, and within 5 feet, it's gone.
Yeah.
So,
because everyone's like, oh, what's 5 feet? But it's like, it's 5 feet everywhere on the planet.
Yeah.
That's so much water.
Yeah, so anything that's beach, anything that is sea level is now 5 feet underwater.
Yeah, it's no longer
beach, it's
underwater.
And that's halfway. It's going to be 10 feet.
Yeah.
So I was talking to my dad on Father's Day, and I started asking, like, oh, how's Rockaway doing? Because I haven't been there in, like, a year. And I'm like, how's the rebuilding going? How's all this? And I was like, and I said, what's preventing this from happening again? Because it's going to happen again. And then my dad like didn't really want to do it. He's like, oh, they're building up the dunes. Like,
Good talk, Dad.
pretty much it, because we managed to politicize even science, and in a way that in a way that we didn't when the first series was on. But, and I thought this was one of the great things about the show was, I think we'll say Neil deGrasse Tyson, even though he's listed as the host. Mm-hmm. But Andrian, who I believe was Carl Sagan's wife, is producing. Brennan Braga, who worked on all the Star Treks, is producing. Seth MacFarlane's a big part of it.
Yeah.
But I think just for the conversation, we'll say Neil deGrasse Tyson said this.
Yeah.
Because obviously he believes it all.
Mm-hmm.
Is
because it's true.
Yeah. Well,
That's a problem with a lot of people. It's just they're always like, oh, you believe in that? How do you believe in that? And it's like, well, because it's true. There's no illusion here. We're not going on a whim. I'm not making this up because it sounds cool or makes sense to me. Like, it's true. Like there is a thing called, like, science is behind it. And a lot of people say, like, science is just, like, a strong way to say make-believe, but it's not. It's
yeah.
Like, well, that's if you don't understand it.
Yeah, but it's like there's laws within it. And the reason why an outcome comes in using this, and the scientific method is, like, mm-hmm. how he opens up the show is he describes to you the scientific method. It's like, if you want to understand everything that's going on, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take facts that are known. We're gonna put them with hypotheses and we're going to see what happens in the outcome.
And we're going to test it.
Yeah, test it. And if the outcome changes, then we're going to see why that outcome happened. Or if, like, something along the way proves that we're wrong, then we're going to
change our hypothesis.
Like, yeah, we're going to. What's wrong? Like, if it proves that we're wrong, we're going to accept that it's wrong and go on to the next step. And it's like, it's something that, like, the best thing, the way he did, when he opened with that, it was just like, there could be a chance that we're wrong and we have to accept that so we can move on to, like, the next thing. And that's the problem with a lot of people. A lot of people don't want to be wrong. They don't want to, they want to believe that everything's going to be right and continuously doing.
Well, they want to believe they're right, whether what they're thinking is positive or negative. They just want to be right. And I think
we can't all be right. And it's like the biggest American problem is that, you know, we're wrong sometimes and we have to admit to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I loved is how he sets up that argument. And I think you really hit your head on part of the thrust of the show was not just, which is the Carl Sagan version. And I got to see the Carl Sagan version because when I put Cosmos in my DVR, the National Geographic Channel reran the entire Carl Sagan series in one day. So my DVR picked it up because they both said Cosmos. And so I got to watch both series.
And that's something that I know that Fox put it out, but the cool thing about this modern take on Cosmos, or just this newer version of it, is, yes, it came out on Fox on a Sunday, and I think then on a Tuesday it comes on National Geographic.
Yeah, right? National Geographic Channel was showing
it. But it comes on National Geographic, and then it comes out in like 26 different languages. So this is an international show. Like, there's a Spanish one.
Yeah.
But I know that there's, like, other European and, like, in Africa, different
they're just, languages. Like, pushing it as much so and that everyone like can.
The Fraggle Rock of science shows.
Yeah, so what's great about it is just the fact that, like, yes, Americans get to see this show, but not just Americans. Like, it's going, he's trying to spread this out as far as he can, because us understanding about science it benefits us, but it also benefits the world. Like, this is something that, like, could help everyone.
Well, the issues that he's talking about are global issues. They're not, hey, this is what is happening to America. This is what's happening to the planet. But I love how, basically he would use the examples of, scientists throughout history, and some of which you've heard of and some of which you hadn't. And I thought the most telling one was the scientist who discovered that lead was poisonous.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
And that was great because it was this kind of sly wink at global climate deniers of, like, yeah, there were a lot of people spending a lot of money to tell you that lead was fine because the gasolines were pumping it out, and it took a really long time and a lot of convincing and a lot of fighting to prove that lead was poisonous. And once that was accepted and stopped being used, the Earth got better. But I think the way Neil deGrasse Tyson said it, he said, when business is short-term thinking.
Yeah.
And
that's the problem with, like, global warming and all that other stuff.
Right. It's like, I don't... But it's just really frustrating. Well, it's like, I don't want to stop making money from this revenue source.
Right.
You know, but I don't know... You know, BP could have... I remember in the 90s, BP stopped calling themselves an oil company, started calling themselves an energy company.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, great, you're going to invest in a solar and electric and wind. And that didn't happen because oil was still making money. And then
it's
once
technically still energy, so they can get away.
Yeah,
with
once
it.
The Iraq War happened, it oil prices shot through the roof. And they were like, hey, people pay these prices.
Yeah.
When we went to Puerto Rico, gas was 99 cents a gallon.
But can you imagine, though, like, just imagine how, just let's pretend, like, how much more money BP could be making mm-hmm. if at that time they were just like, man, this is great. We're using gas and everything. But what if we went solar and wind?
And that's what they said they were going to do.
Yeah, but let's say if that did happen, like, instead of having oil rigs out in the ocean, we put, like, wind panels out there and we had solar panels mm-hmm. and, like, you know, Arizona on people's roofs and California and stuff like that, they would be like, this is amazing. Yes, it costs a lot of money to put these solar panels and get those windmills out there, but that's it. Like, we have to maintain them. But this sun thing, it goes on forever.
Yeah, and that's mentioned in that the sun gives us more energy than we'll ever need to run everything. Have you guys seen the internet video, the solar roadways?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Dave's favorite.
Those are incredible. And part of me thinks, yeah, it's not going to happen. Because I feel like the investment of changing all the roads with these, but there's so much they could do. Because not only do they collect the energy and they can light themselves, so they can change lanes, but they can give traffic signals, they can give warnings.
They'll melt the roads. The best thing about it is just also like, okay, you did say like, yes, it's going to take like to change all the roadways, but that means there's going to be constant work.
Yeah.
And yeah, but there already is constant work.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's just a matter of what business you want to be in. You know, and it's like, and
we don't have the work that we'll take to make those doesn't equal up to the amount of work that for like repairing roadways and highways and stuff like that. Like, it's just the economy would boom.
Yeah.
If someone was just like, all right, let's do it. And then honestly, like they in that video, you guys should check it out on YouTube. It's what? Solar
freaking roadways.
Yeah. Or highways or stuff like that. But the guy starts, we just start with sidewalks and parking lots.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just extend from there.
I feel like this is something like Portland should do. And it's like, once you have a city that's running on that and it's working.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Then
someone's
got to pull the trigger on it.
Because really, once business just has to see, oh, this makes money and this makes money cheaper and faster and easier than the way we were making money. That's how innovations happen. It's, you know, you know, we stop using landline phones when iPhones sell millions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always that way. It's always, you have to give the business world the easiest way of doing things.
Yeah. I'm just surprised that Disney doesn't go like, we're going to build a new theme park, but we're going to start with solar panels or like highways on the floor first to save us a boatload of money. And then we're going to build this theme park on top of it.
Yeah.
Well, it's like when I was living in New York, taxis all of a sudden, they all went hybrid.
Yeah.
And I was like, that makes so much sense because they're using less gas. They didn't charge you any less.
Yeah.
You know, you were paying the same whether you got in a fully gas powered SUV taxi or a hybrid taxi.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, we can make more money by doing something a little greener. And it's you have to come up with that reason.
Yeah, people are stupid. You need to sell them on the idea.
Yeah, but that's what Cosmos, the job of Cosmos, right. is trying
well,
to
show
do
us
subconsciously.
When they showed the guy who invented like the circuits, like electricity, and he was like the first guy to figure out how to make that like needle move through mercury.
Right.
And before that, like electricity was just like a novelty thing, like people were doing it like carnivals and circuses. And now it was like people saw like the potential in it and they're like, oh yeah, I can make a buttload of money doing this. And then everyone like jumps on it. Same thing. It's
and
like Rahm Emanuel sign off and be like, I'm sick of paying a fortune to have all these potholes fixed because now there's more from that rain we had last night. There's like 600 more potholes like on Lakeshore Drive alone. And it's like, well, you put in these huge like solar roads, like you don't have that problem anymore. Sure, it'll be initially expensive, but the long run saving.
Yeah, you don't have to replace it.
It'll boost the economy. It'll help drag the city out of this fucking, you know, billion-dollar deficit we're in.
And the fact that like Chicago is just so stuck in like private infrastructure. It's like everything is privatized.
Yeah, Chicago especially.
Yeah, we've really fucked up. I hate it.
Yeah, like, I would say this city was founded on that fucked up mentality. It's not like things went wrong in Chicago.
From the start.
It's like, let's talk about the first mobs ever in America. They're in Chicago!
Yeah, but like just the fact, like those red light cameras, that's all privatized. Those actually go to a business in Arizona now, like parking on the streets, like that meter parking we're paying for.
Yeah, they outsource all that
stuff. That's outsourced. So that's all money that, this is how stupid it's like. It's like, that's all money that you can have, Chicago, but instead you're giving it to another guy, and it's like, you're an idiot.
And
like,
then you're going to try to double everyone's property taxes.
Yeah, and it's like, just fucking get your head out of your ass and realize that you're the city of Chicago and start, like, fucking doing shit right. Ah! Anyway, back to
Cosmos. I've never seen the city of Chicago do things right.
Back to Cosmos.
This went political really fast.
But anyway. We have 20 minutes. Yeah, it's kind of messed up. But like I said, I think that's something that's really important about the show is that they'll break down every argument and they're like, look, we know we don't know everything and there's nothing wrong with that. The point is, here's the things we do know and here's the things like, you know, the global warming is like a good example because it's like the stupid.
Yeah, and they come back to it two or three times
that everyone's like got their heads up to. Their ass. Yeah. It is. Well, it was. It's dumb that we're still fucking around with this when he's like, look, here's how we know it's not the sun. Look, here's how we know it's not, you know, the planet's natural cycle. Here's how we know it's not this. And he deconstructs like every argument. And he's like, here's how we know exactly what it is. And it's just like he shows you in this plainest, simplest terms and analogies a child could understand. And it's like, oh, awesome. And now it's like, I know why global warming is. And I know why it's like not all these other stupid things that like my dad will be like, ah, fuck, they don't know what it is. And it's just like, dad, watch the show. And it's just like, I think that's something where it's like the show is so accessible and being entertaining with like all the effects and stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful show to look at.
It is, yeah.
It has to be the most stressful job in the world to try and explain people like how it's important for them to do changes now, because if they don't, we die as a race of people.
Well, you know, I grew up hearing about this in the 70s and 80s about conservation and the ecology, and because, you know, and they changed the word every decade to try to freshen up.
Was one of the first people telling you, yeah, like, studying in Venus, that first this series. Is what happens.
And it was...
It's an old argument.
But it was an avoidable situation then, and now it's an unavoidable situation. Now it's like, how do we make it a manageable situation, but we're still having the same argument.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Best Week Ever, John Oliver's HBO show?
Yeah.
Is that the one where they had the global climate argument and they brought out 99 scientists?
It was brilliant. They put most of it on YouTube, and that's how I'm seeing it because I don't have HBO. And first I was like, well, this is just the Daily Show on Sunday, but John Oliver's good. But he had an argument where he was talking about global climate warming. He said 97% of scientists agree that we're the cause. He goes, but the problem is when you see it on television, it's one guy for, one guy against.
So it makes it look like it's 50%.
Yeah, and the guy who's for is always Bill Nye.
Yeah.
So he said, so what we've done is we've gotten three scientists that argue against global climate warming. And then we have Bill Nye and 96 other scientists, and they fill the soundstage with it. And it's like, it's something that worries me a lot. I mean, you think of the storms we've had in the last couple of years. You think that would wake things up. You know, as we were saying about Hurricane Sandy, that's where I'm from. And when I went back, it was wiped out in a way that had never happened before.
Yeah, I think we never
had a superstorm.
Wall Street was flooded. You
people
think
are
once,
stupid.
You think once Wall Street was flooded, and I feel like if if I mention another topic, we'll go over the cliff. Into this will just be this like big left leaning. Chuck Dixon will never come on the show again.
That's all right. Keep going. But here's the thing. Here's what I want to say about it. It's just that I feel that at times a lot of people don't like to accept global warming or any other thing like that because it brings fear.
It's depressing and scary.
And like a majority of people are like, you know what? I have more than enough other shit that makes me like stressed out, depressed, and afraid. But my point is like, yeah, you do. And I'm really sorry that happens for you. But this thing called global warming, it will kill you, your family, and any generation. Like,
it will kill
everything.
Species.
It's like we will no longer exist. So, yes, job work sucks. I'm so sorry that you don't make enough money or no one respects you and everything. But maybe we should put those things off to the side and work on this global warming because, and I'll tell you why, because if we don't, it's over. And it's just like, if we survive, there's a chance for you to like turn things around in your own life. But if we die, what's the point of all the other thing that's bugging you?
All that's gone.
And I think, and then I feel like just people like are afraid that like, when you talk about it and the outcome of it, they're like, oh man, we're fucked. Like, this is crazy.
Well, it's so big.
It is. And, you know, and it's hard for people to understand. But the great thing about Cosmos, it does such a good job to make you understand the problem and try not make it seem intimidating or scary, but just be like, this is the situation. Now that you know about it, global warming should be less, you should be less afraid of it. And now rise up and change or fix it.
Yeah, it's something the show does a great job of, is they kind of lay it out and they're like, look, global warming is a serious issue, or all these other things, you know, in the past that they talk about, like these are all like really serious issues. And throughout the ages, there were people, and the people stepped up and we took care of this stuff. And we, it's like, it always kind of leaves like a hopeful note where it's just like, yes, it's really serious, you know, but like there's no better time to start fixing it than like yesterday, like right now we've got to start doing stuff. And I think that's something, you know, he kind of points out through a couple times throughout the show, where he's just like, look, there's always been problems, there's always been adversity and obstacles we have to overcome. Like, we've got the football right now. You know, generations ago, these guys had the football, and they carried it, and they carried it. It's like, now it's up to our generation to really kind of, like, figure out how to deal with global warming, so it's something so, like, future generations can take the football and see how far knowledge can go and how much more we can explore and figure out about the universe and stuff.
And it's, you know? And the great thing is he explains through science, like, how we the challenges that we face now, yes, they're a little bit bigger, but we have better tools to tackle it. And I just feel people don't know about those tools, and it's because of lack of a science education. And we have a show that's in prime time that's trying to spread out throughout the world. We have a television show that's trying to teach us how we could be a better people. And I don't understand why people are scared of that, or people don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, like, Sunday night's like a pretty coveted time slot, right? Like Breaking Bad, yeah. Game of Thrones.
And Fox,
like,
has always owned it. I mean, The Simpsons has been there for 25 years.
Yeah, so it's like they picked it's not like they tried to, like, sweep this show under the rug.
It's always been Fox's big night. And it's Seth MacFarlane's night, because that's when they run 2 to 3 of his shows, depending on.
Yeah.
Like, and he moved his own shows out of the way for this. They moved Bob's Burgers and Family Guy out of the way for an hour a week.
And that's awesome.
Do it. Yeah.
That's like, I think this, you know, it's like, I've watched a lot of like shows like this. Like, there's one like How the Universe Works and all this other stuff. And this was like, you know, a lot of them are great, and a lot of them have like little budgets, so it's like that's kind of cheesy, or it's not as entertaining.
They'll be on PBS because unfortunately, not many people like to endorse these.
And the original one was on PBS.
Yeah.
And when you watch it now, a lot of it was the technology of the day, but it was like, it looked like The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It was like, it was a clear green screen, back then a blue screen, you know, and it had shimmering edges, and, you know, Carl Sagan was blurry in front of it.
Yeah.
And what, like, he was saying was great, and he had a lot of personality. He was this Mr. Rogers type of scientist, and at the time, like, Saturday Night Live and everybody were doing impressions of his voice. The original show had a cultural impact.
Yeah, Johnny Carson did a spot-on impression of him. So it's just like, the fact is, like, yes, like the fact and the information, like all the information back then is still the same information as now, if not more of it. But like, what we're trying to just get to the common people, we have to just put all the bells and whistles, and which Fox did, and it's great.
Right.
Yeah,
and
they looked phenomenal.
And they said there was nothing in Carl Sagan's series that was discredited by this one.
Nothing.
They were like, this isn't a reboot. When we looked at the science, all that science was solid. We've just got more science because it's been 30 years.
And that's what's so great about it.
And that's what
it
we're going to add.
You know, we were talking earlier before the show started about, like, are they going to do a second season? What's it going to be like? And it's like, that's why they can just keep doing seasons, because there's so much information to cover.
Well, it's science.
Exactly.
Yeah, just, you know, people spend their whole careers.
Yeah. Just do everything, you know, and it's, I just think that's like really awesome. And it does even a really good job of just pointing out, like, you know, getting educated as a kid, and I had like Catholic education, so it's probably like a little bit better than like public school. I'm not like a child left behind or something.
Well, depending on where you live.
Yeah.
If you're in a good school zone, sometimes the public schools are better than Catholic schools.
Yeah, but that's like, I consider, like, I think I had like a, you know, a lot of the stuff they talked about I knew about or had heard about or something. But they introduced so many different historical figures and so many different people that I had never heard of. And it's like, oh, this is the guy, you know, that invented this, or this is the girl who had the first written word and the first person to sign their name or something. And it's like, that's really beautiful stuff, like, that they kind of pointed out.
Yeah, and the way they elevate, I thought the animations were gorgeous, too. They always go into an animation when they show the scientists, whereas the original series, they would usually do reenactments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they did this consistent.
Because they just didn't have the budget for it, which is not.
Right, but also is consistent. You knew when you were going back in time to study someone, and you knew where you were, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, and they were getting great guests, so it's like, Patrick Stewart did a voice of one of the characters.
And he did one that Brandon Braga directed, and Brandon Braga had worked on Next Generation.
Yeah.
So there was that connection. But I loved, it was interesting when the whole Spaceship of the Universe, which Carl Sagan had, was gorgeous. You could see they spent a lot of time designing what it would look like and how it would function and how it would move through space. And I was watching with Ben, And he goes into the DNA. There's a whole DNA episode, and he goes through someone's bloodstream. And Ben goes, "Is this real?" And I go, "Well, no, yes, well, no." But
what
I was like,
talking
he's
about
not really in your blood,
right?
But everything he is saying is real.
Yeah, yeah, it's like they're saying pretty much is just like they're showing it as realistic. Like even we were so talking about earlier, those like tatergrades. They're these like
those microscopic. They're scary,
but they're awesome. And it's like they
survived everything.
Show them, and it's just like wow, like. That's a really goofy looking thing. And I'm like, did they make that up? Is that what it looks like? And then I looked online for it and you find actual microscopic pictures things and they looked exactly like that. And it's just like, wow, like I never knew something like that existed. And then it's just like, and then they're like, there's billions of them and they've been around for billions of
and
years.
And they've survived all the extinctions.
The last five.
And that was the biggest thing that hit me. And I had known about the five extinctions before, but it really hammered home the idea of, the planet, and George Carlin said this in one of his specials, the planet is going to be fine.
Oh,
It's going to shift a little bit where it won't have the same ratios of nitrogen and oxygen and carbon, but we're the ones that can't adapt.
And I think that's
we're not the tetragrades.
People don't understand. I think people think global warming, oh, that means we'll just wreck the planet. And they don't think...
It won't be a dead planet. It'll be a planet that creates a new kind of life, probably.
Right. Someone else will take the wheel.
And that's what I'm saying. Is
but
I
it's not
going to
be us.
Know that it's us that are going to die. The planet will be fine. It'll recover in 1,000 years or 1,000,000,000 years or whatever.
Which is just a blink of an eye to like... The universe.
Well, that's the whole cosmic calendar.
And I didn't see the original
Carl Sagan does do that, yeah.
And I thought that was a really nice touch. There's a couple of things they do in the show. Like, he starts on the same cliff Carl Sagan does. He tells a story about how he's a kid and met Carl Sagan. If you watch the opening of the show, before Cosmos comes out and spreads out,
it's
the
Carl
C
Sagan.
And the S are briefly on the screen alone by themselves. It's like a nice little touch to him. But that's what I really like is how much time they took to, I mean, this is like a love letter to that show almost, where it's like, they really do just try to make it as close to that as possible.
And that's, and
like updating all the,
and that's where it comes from, is that both Seth MacFarlane and Neil deGrasse Tyson loved that show and they loved Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
And they wanted to do something to honor it. So, I mean, as political as we're getting, and again, we open the show by saying, like, we don't understand why this is political.
Yeah,
this is science.
It's really messed up because I don't think it's a political argument. It's an argument
for life.
Well, it's a scientific argument that's been hijacked by certain political parties. Like, there's nothing political about global warming. It's a scientific fact. Every reputable scientist with any kind of degree or position agrees global warming is like really happening, and we are definitely 100% the cause of it.
Right.
So it's not a political argument.
And the way,
it isn't.
And the way Neil deGrasse Tyson, he put it so simply, and I never heard global warming put more simply than this. He said, we basically took the carbon that's supposed to be in the ground and we threw it up in the air. We didn't create a new poison. We didn't create anything that's happening. We just moved some stuff.
We're putting too much of it.
We just moved some stuff around that's not good for us, and we've absolutely replicated the environment that killed the dinosaurs.
Yeah,
the dinosaurs were killed by this much carbon in the atmosphere.
Right.
Yeah, but like, what's that quote that I love? There's a quote where it's just like, right now we have the chance. We have the chance, and we have the technology to foresee our own extinction. Say what you want about the dinosaurs, but they didn't see the asteroid coming.
Yeah, what's our excuse?
What's our excuse?
The show ends with one of the... That episode ends with that quote.
And that's like, what is our excuse? Like, no...
I think it's laziness. It's an organizational problem. You mean, Cosmos is doing like a great thing by showing our generation, like a newer, younger generation, all these things and kind of shaming people into being like, look, this is real, like, we can't ignore this anymore, and hopefully that'll kind of get the ball rolling on people making a change. But it's like, on your daily life, like you said, you know, what can I do to change global warming? Oh, I can't stop a billion people on the planet from driving automobiles, so I'm gonna keep driving an automobile. And it's just like, there's totally little
things. Yeah, but
things.
There's little things.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
that's
what
I'm saying.
20 years ago, we didn't recycle.
Yeah.
Now we all do, and we don't think twice about it. 10 years ago, there weren't hybrids. I drive a hybrid.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think that's the thing, though. But it's like,
I drive a hybrid because I like the car. Because my Prius is reliable, even in a Chicago winter. It just starts up, and I go.
Yeah.
I fill up my tank twice a month.
Yeah, that's why my mom bought a Prius.
Yeah,
she bought it because it was cheaper, and she thought it was cute.
And
she didn't give a shit about the environment.
Yeah, she gave you a PT Cruiser, which is not as efficient.
But it's just like, you know, I think that's a mentality. Is like, people just don't care. Or they just think the problem's too big, and
well,
they don't
again,
recognize.
Again,
the
you
steps
have to make it.
Take.
You have to make it easy. Every new technology, has a part that struggles until it hits a watershed moment. I mean, you look at something like Blu-ray. Blu-ray took 4 or 5 years because people are like, ah, I had DVD. Look, it's basically the same thing, right? And you have to, it has to reach enough people where the price comes down where it's so easy. I was in Walmart this morning, and I don't go into Walmart often, but they had an exclusive thing that I needed to get. And I was noticing now they, the DVDs and the Blu-rays are just mixed together. They're basically the same price. It was the same thing with DVD. I remember people saying, I'm not giving up VHS, and DVD was way better.
Yeah.
There was a much bigger gap between DVD and VHS than there is DVD and Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. And it took 3-4 years. Then all of a sudden, boom, everybody was into it. Flat screen TVs. I have not seen a CRT monitor in like 2 years. When was the last time you saw a tube TV?
Yeah.
And I wonder where they went. Because it, at one point it was, when I got the flat screen that we have in this room, I got it 10 years ago. It was really expensive. You never saw them.
Yeah.
And it's not even full HD. It has no features that you need now. It doesn't have HDMI. But there were CRT monitors everywhere. They just don't exist anymore. And that to me is proof that these things do happen.
Yeah.
You know, as they mentioned a few times, and I saw Stephen Hawking saying, you know, 20 years ago, we were all convinced that nuclear war was going to happen and that's how the human race was going to end. We stepped away from that. We never had a nuclear attack.
Yeah.
We dropped, you know, a couple of bombs on Japan and it never happened again.
Yeah,
you
I know, did see that.
There were lots of threats.
I remember watching, like in Watchmen, they have the doomsday clock.
Right.
And I remember watching clips where, like, that was real. And nothing scared me more.
That was the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, nothing scared me more than watching real people calculate when the end of the world was going to happen.
Have you ever heard of the TV miniseries called The Day After?
Yeah.
Well, we saw that when it premiered, and it was a TV miniseries about what America's going to be like when the nuclear missiles hit. And it was about, like, you know, and it followed these characters as they, you know, hunkered in bunkers and they didn't have food anymore and they got radiation poisoning. It was Walking Dead without zombies, and it scared the hell out of everybody. Now, but it was stuff like that is why you had nuclear disarmament. I mean, there's still nuclear missiles out there, but we don't talk about nuclear war anymore.
They don't do like drills like at school. Like my mom used to have like nuclear drills at school.
They used to have radioactive signs on every school to tell you that you could hide in the basement.
I had drills too. Remember, like the famous get under the desk during nuclear war.
Yeah, and but now it's like kids are doing like
now it's get under the desk because someone's coming to shoot you.
Yeah,
right.
But just to go back to like because I don't want to talk about that.
That's a whole topic.
But just the fact that like it was such a big threat, and to calm people down, we made up things that would like defend you. Like I remember going like I know what happens if a nuclear bomb hits. Why is being under the desk gonna like? I remember I got in trouble all the time. It's just like if I go under this desk, I don't think it's gonna stop anything unless this desk is made out of lead. Yeah,
2 inches of wood.
I used to be such a smart ass when I was a kid, and like I got my it was just rough, but. You know, like it's just that type of stuff that people learn about to make them less scared. But then we have Cosmos, where it's just telling you like true facts.
Yeah, that's like the nuclear deterrence of hiding under the desk. This is the first comic book reference we're going to do on the show at 33 minutes. It's like Dark Knight Rises when the bomb's going to go off and the teacher tells all the kids.
Yeah.
All the kids get back on the bus, and like Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like, what's that going to do? He's like, we have to do something. That's what it was like. It was like, tell the kids to get under the desk. But that was something we avoided. We don't always do the worst thing. You know, there's always people that argue to do the worst thing. And as big a proponent as I am of technology, right now I think we're at a critical stage with the internet where every single person has the same amount of voice.
Yeah,
where
which is great.
It's great and it's terrible in a way because every
idiot.
Because every crazy opinion is now carrying the same weight. It's like we said before. There's always one person for global warming, but there's one person arguing that it's happening and one person that's arguing against it. And people are saying, well, I can follow either one of them. And it's moving so fast and there's so much content out there and everybody says this is like by the time it's disproven, nobody hears that it's disproven.
Well,
and so we've got every single opinion that is out there at the same time. So it's very hard to say, okay, most of us agree this, we're going to do this. Because the one guy shouting it's not happening can shout just as loud. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of the mass media where here are the big newspapers, here are the big networks, And that's who's getting the message
and,
out.
And the best thing about it, it's like, yeah, the guy that shouts that it's not happening doesn't have one thing that the people that say it is happening. The guy that shouts denying global warming doesn't have scientific fact to back him up. And that's what Cosmos is all about. No matter what they're talking about, they always backing up a scientific fact. One of my favorite things they did when they were the lead episode, my favorite thing about that is they go back to, what was it? Was it Mesopotamia or was it somewhere in like Greece? But they were just talking about how like they were able to do a plumbing system to irrigate the fields and get water out there. And they were saying that like one of the cheapest metals to build these pipes was out of lead. And they described that they would have a fountain or a pool where everyone would come in and drink their water. And the metal that they used to like collect everything was made out of lead. And then they talk about how people got sick and died and all these horrible things that happened because they were messing around with lead. Now, if I were to tell you, like, here's a cup made out of lead, drink some water out of it, you'd be like, no, that's made out of lead. There's figurines that come out made out of lead.
Yeah, and they have warnings on them. Do not put them in your house if you have children under 12, which is one of the reasons I don't buy them, because they make Batman ones.
Yeah. Right.
So that's the only thing stopping me from getting them.
So I'm telling you that right now, you know? You're like, that's stupid. Why would you put something out of lead? And then the thing is like, we're stuff that we're doing to ourselves.
It's the same.
That's horrible, and we don't think like that.
But we used to have asbestos in our house.
We used to have asbestos. Gas used to be like we used to, and that was like back in the day. Like we're talking about before, like what was that? Like it's 16, like
well, it was hundreds of years ago.
Like a long time ago. Like there was no internet back then. There was no scientific.
No internet in Mesopotamia.
There was nothing back then to like educate these people about it. We now have that education,
right?
But we still ignore that.
Yeah, and I think
it killed tons of people in Rome and stuff.
What's that thing they say about history? Gas. There's nothing new in history because we just make the same mistakes over and over. It's just a different version of it.
I think the only thing that really advances in the human race is technology. Technology is the only thing we can point to that goes, the last generation did this, we're going to build on it. You know, you look at this. We're sitting in a room recording into microphones onto a computer, and we're going to put it on the internet, and anybody in the world can listen to it.
Yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, we had 8-track tapes, and you could have a tape and then hand the tape to somebody else. Before then, it was a needle on wax. Before then, it was the written word. That's the only thing that I see a clear advancement. But human psychology, as much as research we keep doing to find out why we're doing things, like, you know, like why someone is angry at their parents for a reason they can't put their finger on, we're getting a little better at diagnosing things, but
I think
I don't know that we're ever going to fix it.
We're cavemen. I think it's
we're still in the cavemen.
We've talked about this before, and I wish I could quote or come up with where I came up, you know, where I'd read this. But basically, it's like technology is advancing way more fast than like human spirituality is the wrong word. I guess like
our ability
emotional
to
maturity. Our ability to like take care of ourselves, take care of each other, be responsible with our technology is just like we're like 3 years old. But we have technology, we have like nuclear weapons. It's just like this is why that was such a problem, because we were so stupid with our nuclear weapons. And it's just like, let's build plenty of these things.
This was the plot of every other original Star Trek, was they would meet an alien and they'd be like, oh, we have technology that can take you all over the universe in a second, but we won't give that to you because you're not ready.
Yeah, because we're barbarians.
We've given it to ourselves.
Yeah.
But like I think Albert Einstein had a great quote. It's just like, it's not what it's like. I do not know what the weapons of World War III would be fought with, but I do know what the weapons in World War IV would be fought with. Sticks and stones. And
it's Planet of the Apes. You know, it's a Statue of Liberty coming out. And again, a new life form takes over.
Right.
And they all talk like this.
Yeah. But it's just, I don't know. It's like, you really need to ask yourself. It's like, Cosmos is out. Cosmos came, like, there was no, there was a need for Cosmos, but in terms of, like, a gain in money or anything like that, like, there was no need for it. Like, it did great.
But all the information is on the internet.
But the average of Cosmos was 3.5 million viewers. That was their average. But what I'm trying to say is,
that
like,
a lot?
That's a good amount.
In today's day and age, it's decent.
So it's pretty good. But for instance, like what I'm trying to say is like Cosmos is out. The only merchandise from it right now that we know is like a Blu-ray collection of it.
Yes. So you can see it again, which I think is great, because this is something where I see science professors buying this now and then showing it for years.
Yeah, yeah, I kept seeing that on Facebook where they'd be like, Monday mornings, like, your science class just got that much cooler because your teacher's showing clips from Cosmos.
And they would pick a science teacher at the end of every week, which I thought was great.
Yeah,
like, kids would vote for their science teacher to be featured. Oh, and right, okay. I don't know if they showed it on Hulu.
No, Hulu just does the show.
On Fox, right before the credits, they would say, the Cosmos Science Teacher of the Week, and they would show his picture.
Yeah.
So it kind of brought it all together.
Or her picture.
Yeah, there were a few females as well.
That's another thing too, is just like, it did a great job of like, it would be like, yeah, science, you know, we're human, so we've messed up. It's like, admits it owns faults, and it's like, this woman discovered this, and
yeah,
no one believed her because she was a woman. And then years later, somebody would like find out like, oh, that girl was right, and then they'd give her the credit for it. So it is kind of interesting, is that they go back and they kind of show you all these people that have like kind of built and built and built on this like one idea.
And that's what I love about science. Remember when Bill Nye had that evolution debate? And he goes like, listen, you believe that, you know, everything that happened in the Bible happened. I have no problem believing that, as long as you give me evidence to back it up. And Bill Nye goes over and over and over again, and he says that if you can prove to me that man and dinosaur existed at the same time, or the fact that, like, dinosaurs, despite having sharp teeth, only ate plants. If you could prove that to me, I have no problem believing in it, because that's what science is.
Yeah. And Neil deGrasse Tyson said, I don't mind whatever you teach in religion class. I'm not going to come into your religion class and start teaching science, as long as you don't come into my science class and start teaching religion.
Yeah, and that's like, and that's a great thing about science. Like, we can say, for instance, people used to think that the sun spun around Earth, and then someone's like, no, the Earth spins around the sun. And then slowly,
and that
like,
person was excommunicated.
Yeah,
and probably stoned and crucified.
Yeah, it's in Cosmos.
And it happened in Cosmos. But like, when that became actual fact, he didn't have facts to back it up. Right. But when facts were there to back it up, they're like, yeah, we're wrong. All right, rewrite it. And they did. And like, you know, like right now, the coolest thing from Cosmos is like, there's only one universe that we know of. Mm-hmm. But if we discover another universe, we have no problem saying there's now multiverse.
Yeah, I think that's
no
a good
problem
thing
whatsoever.
He says, you know, the big thing
there's
about like
52 of them actually.
Yeah.
There's no shame in not knowing everything, and that it's one of the things scientists like. They like problems where it's just like, hey, there's a lot of radiation coming from like this atmosphere, or whatever. It's just like, that's funny. It's like, that's like a favorite thing for scientists here. It's like, huh. That's funny. It's like, that's the most interesting thing you can say, because it means there's something you can't explain. And they love that. I think that's great.
It's like, it's the new frontier. Science is the new frontier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
To be able to go somewhere and just be like, I don't know why this happens. Let's go figure it out. Yeah. And then it's like, that's an adventure.
You know, it always reminds me of that line in Men in Black. That first Men in Black is one of my favorite movies, when Tommy Lee Jones is recruiting Will Smith, and he's like, 1,000 years ago, everyone knew the world was flat. He's like, 500 years ago, everyone knew the sun went around the earth. And today, you knew that humans were alone on the planet.
Yeah.
What do you think you'll know tomorrow?
Yeah.
And as much as that's a science fiction movie, that is the idea of science, is every generation looks back on the last one and goes, wow, they didn't know anything.
Yeah.
But no one wants to look at our own generation and go, yeah, we don't know that much. And the next generation is probably going to know more than we do.
Well, that's what's really crazy, is if you watching this show where they would go back and they would say, like, who was the first guy to talk about, like, atoms? And then they would go all the way back to, like, ancient Greece. And one guy was like, yeah, these, like, atoms, and, like, this is how atoms work. And everyone's like, that's crazy. And obviously they couldn't prove it. Or, like, the one guy that they threw in jail where he's like, your universe is too small. He's like, imagine firing an arrow out into the cosmos. One of two things is going to happen. It's either going to hit a wall, it's going to go forever. If it hits a wall, what happens? You climb up to the top of the wall, then fire another arrow. One of two things is going to happen. It's going to go forever, it's going to hit a wall. And it was just like, that's crazy that this guy thought about that so long ago, and it took thousands of years for people to get their shit together and be like, oh, that dude was right.
Yeah.
And it's just like, imagine thinking that, like, thinking that big that long ago.
And it's like, and they say that, like, that type of thinking is that innovation of thought is what we're missing out now.
Yeah.
Like Stephen Hawking is a genius. He could do calculations in his head that would take two people working on a computer to figure it out. And just I don't know if that's scientifically true, whatever. But I know he's a genius in math. What I'm trying to say is, like, that's incredible. And we all think he's like a genius and super smart and everything. But Albert Einstein was a guy that's thinking, What is energy, really? It's like, what is all this stuff? And then he just goes, E equals MC squared. And the person before him, Isaac Newton, was like, why does gravity exist?
Yeah, I think there's two different schools of thought.
Yeah, and like Isaac Newton goes, I think gravity, the reason we have this gravity, I don't know it. Let me go home, build math, come up with a math to explain gravity.
Right.
And he goes home. Comes back like maybe what, like 2 weeks?
No, it's, I think it's a couple of years.
But anyway,
but he does invent a math that makes it work.
Yeah, he invents a math.
People spend their entire lives trying to figure out still.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference, is there's two groups, I think, of like super smart scientific-y people. And the first hand, you have guys probably like Stephen Hawking, who, and I don't know any of this to be true. I don't know how smart the guy is. I assume he's probably like the top three smartest dudes on the planet. It's just him. They just repeat his name because he's so smart. So, but there's like a creative element. Like Albert Einstein, they said he figured out the speed of light by imagining riding a beam of light from the sun to the earth. And he was like, oh, how long would that take? And it's just like that level of creativity is different than you turn the light on and there's light. No one ever thought before it had a speed.
Yeah.
And I think that's the creative element that's missing, is the really intelligent guys are the guys who are thinking so diametrically different than the herd that it's just like they're the ones advancing it. That's why Newton was so smart, is because like he was asking questions. Everyone else was like, shit falls out of the tree, that's like what happens. And he's like, well, wait, well, why? And it's just like, boom, and he invents like this whole field of science that like people are still like, we're still trying to like wrestle with like what that guy came up with.
Well, the one big thing I walked away with, I feel like, as we've been talking about who's been arguing against it, because Christian Scientists said that they should have a half an hour on every episode of Cosmos counterpoint. And I was like, it's not a debate. But the one thing I kept coming back to is it's all about change, because innately we want some sort of security and permanence. You know, we want right now everybody's kind of stressed out because, you know, the economy hasn't recovered and global warming is happening and everything seems to be in flux. And the one thing this show really taught me was like everything is going to change. Like, you know, we're still experiencing the Big Bang. Whether there's two schools of thoughts, whether it's going to stop and come back together, or whether it's just going to go on forever, we are living through a period of extreme change. It's just taking billions of years.
Yeah.
So what we have is temporary. Obviously, our lives are temporary. And I remember the first time I heard it was in college, that the sun is going to burn out in 4 billion years. But you know, but plate tectonics haven't stopped. Like we've always talked about when all the continents were one landmass, and they slowly spread, and they're just going to keep doing that until they bump into the other side.
Right, totally, and then they'll go the other way.
Yeah, and there's nothing that is going to just be locked down in the entire universe. The Milky Way galaxy is still spiraling around.
So apparently we are going. So the Andromeda system is the next star system.
It's our biggest galactic neighbor. They did this in How the Universe Works. So they talk about that we're on a collision course with this other galaxy. It's the Milky Way and Andromeda. And they kind of do like a computer simulation of what it looks like, sped up like a billion times so you can actually see it happening. And we're pretty much going to collide with this. It all like swirls around in this like hot mess. And then like a new galaxy's formed.
And like, the crazy thing about that, like, so if I tell you that, you're like, oh man, everyone's going to be dead. Any civilization, any life form. It's going to happen so slow that if you were immortal, you could live through the whole entire
thing. They were even showing, and that's one of the great things that these shows can do now, is they can show like these really spectacular visuals that, you know, would be absurd otherwise, is as they said, this is what it would look like to be on Earth when that happens. And he says, like, the Earth will be different. You know, mountains, you wouldn't recognize the landscape or the ocean.
Everything's going to keep shifting.
But you just see this giant, the Andromeda galaxy, like, huge in the sky. It would fill the sky. The sky would be so bright. And it's actually pretty ridiculous. You know, they was even saying, Tyson had that great quote on the show where he's like, if we figure out how to get off this planet, it won't be us. It'll be a whole new species. Right. We won't be humans anymore. There won't be humans. It'll be the next level of evolution that'll be the people that figure out how to get out.
And people say if we have generations that live in space, we won't be humans either, because we won't be subject to the same types of gravity and air pressure that we are now.
You know?
But I think, and we should probably wrap it up, because we also have a call with Bill coming in. But I think the people that are arguing about it, and we've touched upon it a few times, I think the people that are arguing against global warming and against Cosmos and against all this, they're the people most resistant to change. And what Cosmos is teaching us is there's nothing but change.
Yeah.
So if you really hate change – This is terrifying.
Yeah.
But like I said, the best thing about Cosmos is they try to take that fear away from you about the change.
Yeah, I think he does try to show it a few times in the show where he says, like, look, it's actually, it comforts me to see how far back we can look and how it all happened. It's like, how much more special are all our lives when you think, like, the billions of years that took just for the universe to get here. And as far as we know, we're the only thing out there right now. And it's just like, that's pretty incredible. You know, they show the evolution of an eyeball and you're like, look how hard eyeballs have worked to just work. Yeah. And it's just like,
and they don't even work that well. They're designed to work underwater because they started when we were still water breathing.
And I think that's something that's really interesting. And it's something I was talking to Dave about a couple months ago. It's like eyeballs spent more time underwater learning how to be underwater eyeballs than they have exposed to air.
Yeah, which is why they're so wet.
Right, well, which is why our eyes suck.
It also explains why now that we're in the air, why we have so many different animals with different types of like eyeballs, like eagles and
goats,
birds
and all that stuff.
Yep. Goats and
elephants, horses,
lizards.
Yeah.
They all have different
they
eyeball.
All do a little
you
bit
go
different.
Into the ocean and you look at fish, they all have the similar eyeball because they're like, this works well where we are.
But it's the same thing about...
I think so we're trying out different types of air eyeball.
Yeah.
But as long as it's taken the eyeball to adjust, and like I said, we have shitty eyeballs because they spent more time underwater. It's the same thing, I think, with people. I think we spent so long in caves. We spent longer in caves than we have not in caves that I think we still have like a caveman mentality, which is why we fight over shit like land and oil when it's just like we're still... We haven't matured as much. Our brains aren't working the way they should work for our society.
And our bodies are still geared towards hunting gathering and we live this sedentary intellectual lifestyle and our bodies are breaking down faster
and it's like you know, during like in Watchmen they say like, what will it take for Russia and America to finally come along, and they're like, it needs a third, like
common enemy.
A common enemy. We have that now. It's called global warming, because it's not like if we beat global warming, it's not like we like everyone
America can't beat global warming.
But the world can. And the benefit of being global warming is everybody lives. And I don't understand why we don't grasp that concept. I just feel like people are just like, yeah, fuck it.
We're going to wrap up the episode with a check-in from Bill Monroe, who just saw Captain America Winter Soldier, the final Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Godzilla, which are three topics we haven't hit a lot. The first thing I want to talk to you about, you mentioned off air, is that you saw both Captain America Winter Soldier and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
Now, let's put them together as one story.
Sure.
And what did you think?
I like it. I think they came together really well. I think, actually, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ended up being more interesting than Captain America.
Really?
Yes. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got off to a little bit of a rough start. Joss Whedon is a genius in what he does, and with TV series, is oftentimes the first few episodes, it takes a while to get their feet under them. But it was interesting because I was getting, as we were going through much of the late spring, I was getting caught up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then when I found out that it was going to be tied into Captain America, once Captain America came out, I had to stop watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. until I could get to the theater and watch Captain America.
That's great, because Renee missed it. I talked about this when we saw it, but I took Ben to it, and Renee stayed home with the baby. So she missed it, but she kept watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So every week I was like, and a little bit more of Captain America's ruined. So we finally we went to the second run theater. I saw it for the second time. She saw it for the first time. And for her, I guess it was kind of like it's another comic experience, because it's kind of like when you're reading a comic and you want to go back.
Right.
And you just get this random comic and everything has asterisks in it that say what happened.
Yes.
It was like the last six, eight episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kept having an asterisk that said, see Captain America, Winter Soldier. And now she finally went to a comic convention and bought that back issue of Winter Soldier.
she got the graphic novel.
Yeah, but you read it in order.
I did read it in order. You know, what I thought about my initial thoughts on Captain America the movie is, man, that's a long movie, and there's a lot that happens in that movie.
Yeah, it's a full movie.
It is a full movie.
It's not a slow movie by any stretch.
Well,
You think it is?
It felt a little slow to me. Well, I guess slow is the wrong word. It felt lumbering. There's a lot of plot, and there are a lot of different acts and scenes. It goes here and here, and then they're on the run, and then they're fighting, and then there's another fight. And now we got to figure this out, and there's just so much stuff going on. As far as there are long movies that don't really feel like long movies. This was a long movie that felt like a long movie.
I'd say I don't agree that it felt like a long movie. I agree that it is long. And I agree there is a lot of plot. But I felt that, especially seeing it twice, I felt that it just kept moving. And I was surprised by how well the tension works. Because that third act where Cap's fighting Bucky in the, you know, the helicarrier.
Right. That felt to me a little more like it was the sixth act in the movie.
Well, yeah. Okay. It goes through a lot. The book has many chapters.
Yes, it does.
It's not a 6-issue series. It's a 13-issue series.
and I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
But I felt every minute of that movie as it was going along.
All right. I can see that. But I don't think it dragged. That's my counter argument.
Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't say it dragged. That's why I like lumbering more. Just because there's a lot of stuff and it's moving forward. It's moving forward. But man, there's a lot of weight there.
There's a lot of weight there. And
I don't think it's not so much that there were chunks of it. You know, normally when I see a movie that I don't like and that's just slow, I can see chunks. They should have just cut this whole thing out. And there really isn't a big chunk you can cut out of that movie. No. They're building this massive thing out of there and really turning I haven't seen, the X-Men movie, but I wouldn't be surprised if what happens here comes into play there, or if not there, in future Marvel movies. Because they really just turned the entire Marvel universe, they turned a big chunk of that upside down.
Yeah, well, this was, I felt more than any other film, and I think, and I really feel this is the way Marvel's going to do it going forward. It's not so much Captain America 2 as it is Marvel 9.
Right.
Where it's like every movie is the sequel to the last movie that came out, but we're focusing on a different character. And that's why I'm curious about Guardians of the Galaxy, because we're going to change locations completely, introduce all new characters, but it's supposed to be the next Marvel chapter.
Right, right. Now here's the question then. Is that the next Marvel chapter after Captain America, or is the last 6 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. the chapter after Captain America, and then Guardians of the Galaxy comes into play after that that end of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Although, to be fair, I guess Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the last 6 or so episodes really takes place probably within the 4 or 5 days after Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I would say Guardians of the Galaxy will come after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s season finale. And
right.
It's all moving in real time.
Right.
Whether or not it has been real time, like whether or not it's been 6 years since Tony first designed the Iron Man armor, I don't know. But these are absolutely going in order regardless of what media they're in and what character they focus on. And that was the whole controversy with Ant-Man.
Right.
With Edgar Wright leaving because he wanted to make his own movie and Marvel was like, no, you have to make the next chapter. And then it was hard for them to find somebody else. They went to Adam McKay. They went to the director of Meet the Millers. And these guys that have made a name for themselves aren't all that interested in basically making a really expensive TV episode.
Okay.
It's more like we have 3 years to watch, 10 episodes of Marvel that are really expensive and that we have to pay for.
And that's kind of where one of those things that makes it even more brilliant. Somebody can claim this was their brilliant plan all along when they hired Joss Whedon for the Avengers.
Yeah, and that was always, and he has the tentpole, so everything is building to Avengers 2.
Right.
After Avengers 2, everything will restart.
Right.
We're expected to get Thor 3 and Captain America 3. It looks like Iron Man's done because they don't want to pay Robert Downey Jr. anymore, and he doesn't want to run around. He's got enough money where he doesn't need to run around like that.
Exactly. And he's going to hang on to his money this time.
Yeah, well, he signed on for Avengers 3 and 4, which I assume is him behind a desk quipping at people.
Right, which makes perfect sense. Or really, they could just shoot him in the suit the whole time. So all they have to do is just shoot Robert Downey Jr., just the headshots.
Yeah, not even.
He doesn't even have to be in the suit to act.
No, and then the helmet closes and he doesn't need to be in the country.
Exactly. He can do it. He can do it on Skype.
Yeah. What are your feelings about now Netflix? Because they're going to introduce 4 more series into this.
You know, that's not even something I was even familiar with. But that becomes a real interesting way of fleshing that out too. Because I mean, that follows the straight up comic book model.
Yep.
Of having your mini series, having your big annual. Your big spectacular and fleshing it out all along the time. So what's Netflix planning? Are they going to do a Power Pack series? Or?
Well, you're close. They're doing Daredevil. They're doing Luke Cage.
Okay.
They're doing Iron Fist.
Okay.
And then they're all going to come together for the Defenders.
Ah.
So basically, it's going to be the street level guys, which you can do on a TV budget.
Right.
So it's kind of – they're doing what DC's doing on television with Flash and Gotham and Arrow and Constantine.
Right.
But they're doing it all on Netflix.
Okay. Which then, of course, makes it a lot easier for, you know, how folks are watching these mm-hmm. days. You know, it's interesting putting it in that challenge then of also taking out the necessarily episodic element of it.
Yeah, well, they did say that Daredevil is a 13-chapter arc. So okay. It's going to be like 24. It's one. Right. They said Daredevil is one story.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, to see how that's going to come and to just be able to land that. And it's really interesting what Netflix is doing with the industry now. And down the road, I wonder then how that's going to impact other Marvel shows. Is Netflix going to get the exclusive on all the Marvel content and lock out Amazon Prime streaming or Hulu Plus, or you know, even the Xfinity and streaming services.
Depends on Disney, I think. However they make that deal, that right. deal's going to include Star Wars. That deal's going to include Pixar. But right. But you know, Disney owns ABC, so it's not like we're not going to see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. move to Netflix. But I'm sure we'll see seasons 1 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. streaming.
Right. Well, that also though opens up the whole other side of the net neutrality issue,
yep.
with the whole idea of trying to the cable companies double dipping, where it becomes a real problem with Comcast, one of the largest ISPs in the country, also being such a huge content producer. I mean, there is an active disincentive, for Comcast to go ahead and promote an ABC show by allowing Netflix to stream at full at the full speed their subscribers are paying for.
Yeah, you know, I've been following the net neutrality issue, but I actually haven't thought of it as in terms of revenge before.
Oh, sure.
It's not so. I always thought of it as Netflix makes a lot of money. Let's get more money out of them. Which, of course, Netflix is already turning it around to. Well, we'll charge our members more.
Right.
But it's also a matter of, oh, Netflix, you have Orange is the New Black and Arrested Development and House of Cards, and we can't show that to our cable subscribers? Well, screw you.
Exactly. And that's where it becomes real problematic. As a cable subscriber, I am paying such and such a month to get access to the whole internet. It's not on my cable, none of my ISP's business to decide that, oh, you want to get bits from this site? We're going to send them slower. Because they didn't pay us money on the back end. That's ridiculous. That's the case. You know, yeah, I'm paying my ISP for the bits. Not my ISP shouldn't be able to send me bits slower from some other place just so they can try to double dip or force their content down when I want somebody else's.
It's graft.
Yeah.
that's all it is. Mm-hmm. It's pretty frightening.
Right. I will tell you though on a more happier side of things, one of my favorite aspects of Captain America is in the final battles at the Shield facility, mm-hmm. where we're actually seeing who is going to stand up for Shield and who is going to, you know, in opposition to Hydra. And you got the guy refusing to launch the helicarriers on Captain's orders, and that is just awesome to see those moments and those types of things come through, because Captain America is a hard character to get behind. And I think that's one of the things that we were trying to do with Winter Soldier, is really alter that perception. Because Captain America, in some respects, and as not having read many of the Captain America comic books, and not having been followed him as in-depth as some other as many fans may have, Captain America ends up having a similar problem to the Superman character in a different respect. Not so much from, you know, the invincibility, although he did seem pretty darn invincible in this movie.
They really played up the super soldier. He jumped really high.
He jumped really high. He's doing all kinds of parkour and stuff. But the whole, you know, the whole clear truth, justice, and the American way type of thing, which is a harder thing to position in the modern era. I think, you know, with Trent showing Cap's transition and trying to adjust from the 40s to the modern era and the things he has to learn about in pop culture. And I think they do did a real nice job in this movie of balancing that and giving him some depth. So you've got, you know, not just the super soldier, but, you know, the Boy Scout being able to adapt into the modern era and giving us there's sometimes when you can have somebody who's just, you know, it just stands up as that bright beacon, and people respond to that. And even though we may not feel it's realistic, and it may be not in a darker world, of having that character there, that is really cool sometimes. And I think they did a real nice job with that.
Yeah, I think they did too, because you know Cap is going to stand up and do the right thing. But so what they do is raise the stakes so high that it's very hard for him to stand up and do the right thing. And to stand up and do the right thing means sacrificing everything, and he does it. And that's why you root for him.
Right.
Whereas with Superman, he's so powerful anyway, that what has he got to lose?
Right.
You know, yeah, I really loved it. I liked it more than X-Men or Spider-Man, which I know you haven't seen yet. But so far, it's my favorite movie of the year.
Okay.
And as I said, it really kicked Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the ass and got it moving. It made me feel like they obviously knew this was coming when they started.
Right.
So, but it really gives more perspective to some of those filler episodes, because you can tell they're just like, when can we blow up S.H.I.E.L.D.? Oh, April? All right, here's a kid with a cold gun. I don't know.
yeah, exactly. It's going to make it really gives them a lot more depth and a lot better context to what's going on. It's going to be interesting. I'm going to have to go back and watch more of the first half of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. again, because I always liked the show, but it'll be interesting to see just how much more depth it has now and how much broader context it has with what they're doing with Sky and what they're doing with Coulson and Tahiti and everything.
And Ward.
And Ward. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's...
Like, are there seeds of his betrayal that we didn't catch?
Because one of the complaints people I've read a lot about, people complaining about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I can see it, is that Ward as a character always just seemed sort of wooden and off, and a lot of folks seem to blame the writing or the actor. But, you know, perhaps there's more to his ultimate betrayal that feeds that, and his never quite being quite natural as that agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Well, now we see why it wasn't quite as natural as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Yeah, and I will say his performance really took a leap upward once he turned evil.
Right, exactly.
So I got a much better idea of his range. Now, we have not talked about this yet, but you saw Godzilla.
I did see Godzilla.
I haven't seen it, so how is it?
It's good.
Okay.
I have some serious there's some problems with it, but I mean, it's a solid fun movie. It's as far as big recent giant things fighting or kaiju movies are concerned, I liked Pacific Rim a lot more.
Yeah, Pacific Rim was really fun.
It was really fun. Godzilla has a couple of problems with it. First of all, the main character that we're following, the main human character we're following through the movie, doesn't really do much of anything. I mean, obviously, we're already spoiler filled in this podcast, so right. So he has he's responsible. He's supposed to do a lot of things, but he doesn't really end up being responsible for anything except blowing up an egg farm towards the end.
Is and this Bryan Cranston?
No, Bryan Cranston. He's shall I spoil some things for you as well here?
Yeah, I heard he's not in it much.
He's dead in the first 15-20 minutes.
Aww.
You know, and he is a more significant character than the lead we follow, who's his son, who follows through everything and goes.
Is it Jesse Pinkman?
No.
No. Yo, that's a big lizard, bitch. I would pay for that.
Well, you know, he sort of follows it through. He's supposed to be the audience's entry into this world, but for the most part, things just wouldn't happen, just would have happened pretty much the same way without him. Mm-hmm. The first, we don't even see Godzilla until almost halfway through into the movie. The first giant creature we see is the creature Godzilla is going to be fighting. And a lot of times when we see the monsters fighting, we're seeing them fighting on TV or off in the distance. So, you know, there's just not a lot there. The bad monsters are being, are drawn to, you know, there's technical things that just make no sense to me. They're being drawn to big receptions of nuclear and radioactive waste. Okay, great. So they go to Yucca Mountain. Which, of course, we didn't actually end up filling with nuclear waste, but, you know, never mind that. They bypassed all the nuclear power plants and facilities in California to get there. There's just some logical things that, you know, I'm willing to set aside because it is a monster movie, but there's not enough of the monsters fighting. There's not nearly a monster-dominant movie in the way you would want a Godzilla movie to be. It's still a lot of fun. It's a good movie. It's worth seeing, and it is worth seeing on the big screen. In terms of how it compares to some of the Godzilla movies of youth, I used to love watching those things when they'd come on the weekday afternoon movies. They'd have that Godzilla week that was, in New York City always came on. When it was on, it would come on after The Edge of Night ended on, 4 o'clock on weekdays. And
yeah, they would switch from that to Planet of the Apes when they ran out of Godzilla movies.
Right, exactly. You could see Godzilla and Gamera, who was always my favorite. Flying Turtle is just awesome.
Gamera to me is Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, they did end up doing Gamera on there too, didn't they? Did they do Jet Jaguar on?
Oh my God, they did. They had the Jet Jaguar theme song. Howie Weingarten and I used to sing that. Jet Jaguar. Jet Jaguar. Oh my.
That was awesome.
We used to get drunk and sing that.
How could you not?
With that big smiley face.
And then the Godzilla versus the Smog Monster. That was the really scary one. And then, Godzuki or, Monster Island with Godzilla's son. And so there was a lot of camp there. But I think what the part of the thing that with this Godzilla movie is, I mean, you don't really get as into the character, the characters. And it's not as campy as the originals. There's still a lot of fun. It's still worth seeing. Dial your expectations appropriately.
Follow the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page for all the latest news before next week's episode. You can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. And you can find Steven at Chimera's Comics at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. We'll talk to you next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!